Tereo Ererangi o Te Mānia. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora tātou, ngamihi nui kia koutou. A warm welcome to Cab On Air, a program brought to you by Citizens Advice Bureau, where we talk about your rights and where and how you can get help to support you and your whānau. Our focus is on some of the hot topics we see at CAB, and we invite other community organisations to join us and share information about their services as well. Kia ora koutou, ko Ronnie Aho. I'm your host today, along with Tom, our technical producer. This week in the studio, Tom and I are delighted to welcome someone that we work really closely with, Jamie Martin from Community Law. And today, Jamie's going to update us on recent changes to tenancy laws, which affect both tenants and landlords in their rights and responsibilities. And he's also going to clarify a number of legal areas that our clients at CAB often have questions about. Ahi ahi Māori, eh? So great to have you with us today, Jamie. It's been a while. So it's neat to have you back in the studio with us. Can you just tell us about your role now at Community Law?
Yeah, no problem. Well, thank you for having me back. It was great to be on earlier. So at Community Law, I work as one of our solicitors. So we've got quite a big team there. And I specialise in tenancy and prison law, which both very different, but we'll focus on the tenancy today.
Okay, we're focusing on the tenancy, but the other sounds incredibly interesting as well. So there have been lots of changes in tenancy law in the last year or so, as you well know, I'm sure. Since this is our focus, so can you just tell us a bit about the major changes, the things that we need to be aware of in this space?
Yeah, no problem. So tenancy's quite a hard space to keep up to date with. Mm. So every government that comes in loves to make a few tweaks and make a few changes. And this latest one's been no different. So some of the biggest changes we've seen are around how tenancies can be ended. That's probably the biggest area that we've seen a lot of shifts. And then obviously pets have probably been the next biggest change. That hasn't quite come into force yet. So it's mostly been those terminations.
Okay, well, we'll come and we'll talk about the termination phase maybe a bit later on. So that's great. Well, tell us about the pets.
Yeah, so the pets is the new pet bonds that are being brought in, which we'll see how they work. So most of the councils have to have a look first and work out, okay, how exactly do we want this to mesh with our guidelines? But the idea is that landlords will be able to charge an extra 2 weeks' rent as bond and allow you to have a pet. Good news for pet owners in general, but it does mean we're going to see people with quite sizable bonds now. So they're already at 4 weeks as a max, 6 weeks of rent as a max. For a lot of people, that's a pretty sizable chunk of change. And when it comes to recovering that at the end of a tenancy, I think that's where we might see an increase in some problems. Some of the legislation around responsibility for pet damage is also a little bit different to normal liability. We're still going to see how that works once it's in place, but that's kind of what we're keeping an eye on.
Okay, I guess there's quite a difference then between having pet mice and having a very large dog.
Exactly.
Okay, in terms of potential damage at the end. Okay, so tell us about some of the implications for landlords and tenants, and maybe even just brush us up on what the responsibilities of landlords and tenants are, because obviously both parties have got rights, but they've also got responsibilities, and that's often where things clash and go wrong, isn't it?
Exactly. Okay. People love to remember their rights. They're not so good at remembering those obligations.
Right.
And that is on both sides of things. So it's probably the biggest changes we've seen are around when the security of being in the tenancy. What a lot of people don't think about with tenancy is that when you are the tenant, that is now basically your house. You have full rights to that property, to live there, to quietly enjoy living there. And you're not just kind of renting a room, right? It is your place to live. It's your home. The security of that has changed a bit lately. So it used to be that if you were on what we call a periodic tenancy, so it keeps rolling over, that can actually be ended without a good reason. So you needed to have done something wrong, you needed to have not paid rent, things like that. What we're seeing now, though, with the latest changes, is a landlord can just terminate that. So basically a no-fault or no-cause eviction. They do have to give you 90 days. But that security for a lot of people who are in periodic tenancies has reduced a lot. So if you are in one now or you were in one, we're seeing a lot of people trying to shift to fixed-term tenancies, which is where it's locked in for a certain date. because they are worried basically about, okay, 90 days isn't a long time to find a new place. And that's in places where you were previously pretty secure. It took a lot. If you were a good tenant, it was pretty hard to get you out of there. That's changed pretty drastically. And that 90 days is only for if there's nothing that they can kind of attribute it to. If the landlord is selling the place or they're moving into it, or there's a few other factors, but particularly if they're moving into it themselves or their family is, they only have to give you 42 days now.
Wow.
Which is a pretty big shift. So previously, if they were moving in, they needed to give you about 90 days. Now 42. So that's, you know, over a 50% cut. Pretty massive shift. The idea is to make tenancies more flexible and encourage landlords to kind of take people on that maybe they would have been reluctant to previously. That's the idea behind it. What we're seeing, though, is that people are just a little bit more worried about being kicked out. And they're therefore reluctant to raise issues that come up.
Right. So it's hard really to see whose interests are actually being served here.
It can be a little bit difficult, yeah. And probably the biggest thing that we see when people are raising issues around these changes is who's getting most of the benefit.
Mm.
Those termination periods for landlords, they've reduced massively. Previously, if they didn't have a reason, couldn't even have you removed. Now, if they do have a reason, so moving in, for example, that's been reduced massively. In comparison, for a tenant, the only real change is they've gone from needing to give 28 days notice to 21 days notice.
Right.
So they've effectively had their notice period shortened by a week, whereas the landlords have had theirs shortened by, you know,
month and a half.
At 48 days. Yeah. It's a pretty sizable difference. For most people, 1 week's extra notice isn't making that much of a difference. Thankfully, there are some protections, and we'll get into that a bit later. But the idea is that a landlord can't just terminate your tenancy because you've raised some issue or you're stood up for some of your tenancy rights. They can't just terminate because of that. So it's called a retaliatory notice. It's an area of law where seeing get tested a little bit of, okay, well, what does that look like? What does that count as? And that's, I think, where most people need to have a think about, okay, should I still raise this issue? People can be really reluctant to. Maybe there's a problem with the heat pump or something. If people are worried about raising that issue because, oh, I'll get 90 days or I'll get 42 days or whatever it is, they should remember the fact that they are allowed to raise those issues, because if they get kicked out for doing that, the tenancy tribunal can say, hey, that's not allowed.
Right. I know someone actually very close, lives quite close to me, who has a similar kind of issue. Roof leaking, not my own, but roof leaking, but doesn't want to say anything because,
yeah,
it's a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah. So what we encourage people to do is when they raise the issue, make sure they're doing it in writing. They're doing it through the correct processes. So what we would typically call a 14-day notice. So send an email, send a text. So you've got something to fall back on, because if the landlord does kick back and say, actually, it's easier to just kick you out at this point, what you can say is, well, this is clearly because I've raised this issue. And that is a pretty solid defense. But you need to be able to really tightly connect those two things. So just because if you raise it verbally and you've kind of brought up some issues a few times and they kick you out, you haven't got much to fall back on. So
right.
In any legal field, you'll hear it every time. Please do it in writing.
Write it down. Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah.
And of course, we have to keep in mind that most landlords are very, very reasonable. So it's always extremes, isn't it, that we end up talking about as well.
Exactly. Those are the cases that come through to us.
Exactly.
When something's gone wrong.
Yes, when something's gone wrong. And that's what happens, I think, for us as well at CAB. Yeah. One of the things that we often find that people get very muddled around is their role as a tenant, or are they a flatmate? And what's the difference between being a tenant and a head tenant? Can you just clarify some of that for us?
I wish I could clarify it. That causes me and anyone else working in the space a lot of headaches, because, and it's, I think, a byproduct of New Zealand loving to use one word for everything. So flatmate could be anything under the sun, really. But as from a legal perspective, you are a tenant when you are directly paying the landlord rent for you to have the property. So you're not just paying for a room in the landlord's house where they still live there. You're not paying you know, to stay in a little sleep out or something, things like that, you are paying directly to the landlord. They don't live there, and you have at least shared rights to that property. That's when you get all these legal protections. The Tenancy Act, Residential Tenancies Act, actually applies to you. You can use Tenancy Tribunal. Good situation to be in. It does mean you have more obligations, so you can't just kind of get out of there and leave. You do need to give notice and things like that, but you actually get those protections. Flatmate, on the other hand, is just kind of the term we use for anyone who's not falling under that umbrella. So the classic we see is someone owns a house and they're renting out a few of their spare rooms to people. It might look like a tenancy because you're paying the owner of the house directly for a room, but that owner is living there. Their primary use of the house is for their own occupation. So you're not actually considered a tenant, in most decisions at least, and you won't have any of those rights. Same goes if you're renting a room and might not know the owners might not live there, but they're just renting you the room and their child lives there as well, things like that. Or you haven't signed a tenancy agreement, or you're not actually paying rent to the landlord. That's probably the other big example that catches people, is it might look exactly like a tenancy, you're sharing the place with others, but you're not paying anything to the landlord. You just have some agreement with someone who is a tenant. Most of the time in that situation, you're not going to be a tenant yourself. You can be, but you have to go through quite a few steps to make sure that that's done properly, and people aren't doing that. I'd really encourage anyone who's hearing this and is not too sure, am I a tenant or a flatmate? Have a look at your agreement. Does it say tenancy agreement on it? Are you paying directly to the landlord? Does the landlord live there? Those are the kind of main things we look at.
Right. And there's a lot of information on our own website, I think, too, that differentiates or tries to differentiate between those rather thorny terms.
Exactly.
Okay. So you mentioned before that often it's when things go wrong that things arise, isn't it?
Yeah.
So what should people do when things go wrong? So what legal recourse have they got? I mean, you talked about the importance of making sure you write everything down and you've got a really clear kind of pathway through that way. What else?
So the main thing when people have issues is clear communication about it. So most of the time, say the tenant is doing something that the landlord doesn't like or vice versa, and it's something they're maybe not actually allowed to do under the agreement. So the classic that we see is landlords coming round to the property more often than they're actually legally allowed to. Sure, you could jump straight to Tenancy Tribunal, but the best way to resolve this is going to be to just have a direct conversation with them, ideally, once again, in writing, or if it is in person, just back it up in writing. So writing it down afterwards, sending it through and saying, hey, just to confirm, this is what we talked about. A lot of the times things can be resolved as simply as that. It's actually saying, hey, I have a problem with this. Please fix it within the next 2 weeks or 14 days. That resolves maybe 70% of issues that we see come up. It's just giving them a bit of a formal thing of, hey, please stop that. If you still can't resolve the issue or there's no agreement on what the problem is, that's when Tenancy Services does offer mediation. So a lot of people think, there's no point going to mediation, we disagree. Mediation can be really effective, and it saves you both a lot of stress of going through this tribunal thing where you're both having to give your opinion and present evidence. And mediation is a good chance to say, hey, this is what I think. The other side says, hey, this is what I think. And that mediator will often try and suggest something that will work things out for both of you. Mm. Because there often is a way to work things out. There's a happy middle ground. Someone stops doing this, but the rent has decreased or things like that. There's ways to work things out. If you are not able to resolve these things this way, what we'd probably encourage you to do is pop along to CAB or to Community Law, get some advice on, hey, do I actually have something I can take to Tenancy Tribunal, and have a go at doing that. So Tenancy Tribunal will often try say, hey, go to mediation first, give that a go. Otherwise, Tenancy Tribunal isn't as scary as it can sound. So most of the things we see go in there are things like bond disputes, evictions, things where people actually really do care about the result. There's a decent bit of money on the line, or there's the tenancy on the line. it can sound really intimidating to go, but the adjudicators who run those are really good at making sure both sides actually get the chance to have their say, to talk about what they want out of the situation, and show any evidence they've got. And that adjudicator is pretty good at looking at the overall situation. So even if on paper some agreement says something else, they're going to look at, okay, but what's actually happening here? And they can reach some pretty good outcomes.
I think that what you've talked about too is a really good rule of thumb for so many issues that arise, whether neighbourhood issues or whatever they are, isn't it? Talk first, see if you can clarify and get some sort of agreement, write it all down, absolutely. Go to mediation.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, before you go to the next step. So I'm just thinking through that one now. Is it expensive to go to the tenancy tribunal?
No, it's reasonably affordable.
Like the disputes tribunal?
In many cases, it actually ends up being less than disputes tribunal. It's quite common if you're successful in your claim that the cost of applying will then be awarded back to you, particularly if most of your claim is successful. The other thing people worry about with tenancy tribunal is, oh, my name's going to be on some list forever and I'll never get a tenancy again. So some tenancy tribunal orders are published and names will be available, but they're published as a complete summary of this is what happened. So there's not just a list that says this person made a claim. It's to actually look at all the details, people open it up and they see the full decision. It says what happened and why you raised it. And it takes a bit of effort to actually look at it. And if it is something where you go, hey, this is actually going to look not great to future landlords, so I'm worried about my privacy, things like that, you can request the adjudicator to suppress your name. People often forget to ask for it, so we really encourage if you are worried about that, making that request to the adjudicator. It is up to them if they suppress your name, but if you are successful with the majority of your claim, the chances are pretty good that they'll say, well, yep, you were right to come here and you were correct with your claim, we can suppress your name.
You talked about the pros and cons of taking a case there. I mean, one of the other things that sometimes goes wrong, particularly, is when a property manager perhaps is not doing their job particularly well. Any comments around that?
Yeah, it's one of those things that can often be more of a problem for landlords than it is for tenants. If a property manager is difficult to deal with a tenant, I mean, that's day-to-day quite annoying. But end of the day, you're still going to be able to go through tenancy tribunal and resolve the issues. If a property manager has made a decision or said something, that's normally going to be considered to be backed up by what the landlord says and wants to happen. Sometimes that's not the case, and that's where it can be a bit of a problem for landlords, as if a property manager goes a little bit rogue. It doesn't happen too often, but at the moment it is a fairly unregulated industry, so unlike real estate agents, they don't actually typically need to be certified or have any kind of governing body. There was some movement to actually bring that in. There was a bill that made it to Parliament, didn't end up progressing. We'll see if it's something that the government looks at in the future.
Right, to see if the desirability of having some kind of regulation in the area. Well, what about what's happening now about healthy homes? Because that's often a big thing for, it's certainly been focused on hugely in terms of tenancy over the last 3 or 4 years, hasn't it?
Yeah. So what we're seeing now is, as of 1st of July, almost every property should now be covered by healthy homes, excluding a couple of government places, but every private tenancy pretty much is going to be under that now. Healthy homes is one of those things that can create a lot of confusion for people. Most people just think of it as, oh, that's that thing where I have to have insulation and a heat pump, which, you know, isn't far off. The best way to remember or to think about healthy homes that we explain to people is it's an obligation on the landlord to make it possible for you to keep your house warm and dry. That's the kind of the bare bones of it. There's still responsibilities on you as a tenant to take steps to make sure that that actually is the case. So things like opening windows during the day, ventilating the place, avoiding doing washing inside or hanging out inside rather, you know, turning the heat pump on, things like that. Those are responsibilities that the tenant does need to take, but it should be possible for them to keep that place warm and dry. The issues that probably come up the most is windows that don't seal properly, heat pumps that aren't effective enough, lack of insulation, lack of ventilation in kitchens and bathrooms, things like that. Those are the main things we see. There's quite a complicated set of kind of guides and regulations on exactly what is required, which people can find online, and there's some great tools out there for checking things like heat pumps. But if people do just want to quickly assess, okay, oh, this place keeps getting damp and moldy, is there something I can do about it? The advice we normally have is, look, take a couple of weeks of doing everything you possibly can. So ventilating the place during the day, using the heat pump, avoiding drying things inside, and see, does this make a difference? If it doesn't, and it's just genuinely not possible for you to keep the place how it should be, asking the landlord, okay, well, what is your healthy homes compliance? When's the last time you had it looked at? Who looked at it? And having a look yourself at those things we mentioned. So stick your head up in the ceiling, look at the insulation. Have a look around at the windows and doors. Is there mold that just doesn't go away? Things like that. And people can have a look at that, and it is something that landlords are required to fix if there is a problem. I think one of the challenges we see at the moment is that a lot of those healthy home certifications, there's no regulation on who can do that. So we'll often see landlords have basically done it themselves for looking at through their things and saying, yeah, that's all up to code. So just because the landlord can show you a piece of paper saying, hey, 3 years ago we checked the place and it seems like it was up to healthy home standards, doesn't mean that you've got no options to try fix that.
Again, so that's that sort of open, honest discussion and being able to report back that you've done everything you can to try and, you know, make things comfortable and warm, et cetera, and dry. And if it's still going wrong, then, yeah, it's, again, another complex one, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
to find some, other solutions than common sense to that. So what about when tenancy comes to an end? What are some of the thorny things there? Now, you talked a little bit about the changes in periodic detention there. I'm getting your other hat on here, I think. Periodic leases and so on. But what about things like bonds, etc.?
Yeah, so most issues that come up in tenancies, at least for community law, are when they're ending. That's when there's, you know, a decent pot of money that people are looking at. That's when people are not wanting it to end or wanting it to end early. So that's when people are a bit more motivated to do something about it. There's a few issues that come up. So I'll touch on bond in a moment, but I think the other common thing that we see as periodics have gotten a bit less secure, so it used to be pretty guaranteed, these periodic tenancies that are less appealing now, people are going to fixed-term tenancies instead, which are a lot more secure. Very hard for a landlord to end. What people don't think about, it's very hard for a tenant to end as well. So just because a house has some healthy homes problems or you don't like something about it, that's not, in most cases, going to be enough to get you out of that tenancy. So if people are looking at doing a fixed term, make sure that this is a place you are willing and able to pay rent for the next 12 months, basically, if you're doing a year. When it comes time for those tenancies, both fixed and periodic, to actually end, once again, clear communication around, okay, what are we actually looking at when we're doing inspections? If you can be there for that final inspection, please do. It gives you a chance to just explain any little marks that have come up. Taking photos before you've moved in, taking photos just during the house, whenever damage comes up, whenever there's fair wear and tear, and making sure that if the landlord ever does make a claim, and say, hey, actually I'm claiming this bit of the bond, please make sure you actually agree with that before signing any bond return forms. We've had a couple of people who've signed blank bond refund forms, and then the landlord's put in whatever number they want. Please, please avoid doing that. But bond is probably one of the more common things that ends up in tribunal. Once again, trying to work it out first. A lot of these issues can be headed off early, and if people are a bit willing to compromise and go, okay, in fairness, I didn't clean that bit very well, I'll have a good go at that. But yeah, once again, the common theme of tenancy is just clear communication with the landlord, try and get an understanding of what your rights and responsibilities are, and that will cut off most of these issues before they become actual problems.
Heading them off at the pass beforehand, yes. Yeah. One of the things that we find comes up quite often is tenants coming in and saying, well, we've been told we've actually got to have all the floors cleaned, you know, not the floor, the carpet cleaned. And I know that that's actually not something that can be insisted on, I gather.
Most of the time, no. So even if your agreement says so, not something that's compulsory, but...
unless you're fixing engines on the carpet.
Exactly. Yeah. It's one of those reasonable things of look at, okay, well, how have we used the carpet? If you've lived there for 3 years and your landlord agreed that you could have a cat and that cat has, you know, left fur deep in the carpet and things like that, maybe to get it to a state that is reasonably clean and tidy, because that's the expectation, maybe you do need to do that. But it's a conversation. It's a discussion. It's not, this is what it says in the agreement, have to do it.
Okay. So are there any other things that you wanted to talk about around the bond?
I mean, we'll see how things go when we get pet bonds on the table, but I think it's one of those things people will see in newspaper stories about and go, well, why are we bothering about this? For a lot of people who are renting, the bond, that's, you know, 4 weeks of rent, that's one of the largest single chunks of cash that they're going to be dealing with, particularly for younger people. And they need that money for their next place because, you know, often you need to pay that bond before you're even in there. So it's why people will fight for their bonds because it matters a lot to them.
It's a month's rent or 6 weeks' rent. It's huge, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, tenancy and accommodation, of course, is one of the key issues that we actually deal with. And in fact, it's been one of our top three for, like, I would say the last 18 months. Mm. So it's something that it comes up again and again. And of course, we try and give them the best possible information and options that we can. If we can't deal with it, we might suggest that they take that further and talk to someone legal. But are there any other things that you are better equipped to deal with, or things that you're not, or that you'd rather not have to?
I will leave out the one I'd rather not have to. But what we would normally say to people is, so CAB can give great advice on just you're dealing with a dispute or some issue that's come up and you want to know what your options are. Great for that. If you have been given notice to leave, or you're in rent arrears, or you've got a tribunal hearing coming up, there's more serious things, please try to see community law as quick as you can. Tribunal tenancy things can move quite quickly, and there's often pretty narrow windows to get things ready. The sooner you see us, the sooner we can give you a good idea on what to do.
Okay, that's really good advice. So any final takeaways, Jamie?
I think just mostly that communication is pretty key with tenancies. You've got rights, you've got obligations. Find out what they are and make sure you're kind of actually talking to your landlord about them.
Okay. Thanks, Jamie. That's fantastic. Great to be sort of updated and to talk to someone with great expertise in this area. It's quite heartening for me and Tom too to just listen to you here, and hopefully for others as well. So Jamie's summarised the recent changes in tenancy law and the new implications for tenants and landlords. He's touched on healthy homes and what this means and the role of the tenancy tribunal and the pluses and minuses of using them. And he's talked about that really important and probably more thorny area of when tenancies end and what tenants' rights are around things like bonds. So remember that we can help at CAB as well, and community law is also a fantastic place to seek advice when you need it for those thorny things. So thanks so much, Jamie, for being here with us today.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, it's been great to talk to you again. It's always excellent to see you, and we appreciate everything that you do at your end. That's it for today. And finally, thanks for listening, everyone. Until next month, mā te wā. Just a reminder that this show can be found as a podcast. Just go to the Plains FM website and look for CAB On Air. In the meantime, if you're looking for information on any topic, but especially if they relate to your rights in New Zealand, you can contact us at CAB in person, by phone, emails, and through our website, and a lot of other ways as well, I think. We provide verifiable, accurate, and confidential information to help you understand what your next steps should be. So tune in next month when we'll highlight another organisation providing information and support within our community. Kia ora. Thank you for listening. Until next time, mā te wā.